Welcome to The Tax Factor, the top 20 business and investment podcast from Blick Rothenberg, the tax, accounting and business advisory firm. This week with Rob Goodley and Ellie Theachari.
I'm Rob Goodley.
And I'm Ellie Theachari.
And welcome to The Tax Factor, the top 20 business and investment podcast that keeps you up to date on all the latest tax news. This is the first podcast that we've done together, and we'll be talking about ChatGPT being used in a case relating to the high income child benefit charge, an unfortunate spreadsheet rounding error, and the recent BlackRock upper tier tribunal case that will cost the asset manager millions. So Ellie, let's start with some bad news for the Chancellor this week coming out of the Office for National Statistics and what that might mean for tax policy in the run-up to the general election.
That's right, Rob. So not necessarily the news that the Chancellor would have been hoping for, especially given that there have been quite a lot of rumours that he's keen to introduce some further tax cuts in the run-up to what is likely going to be an autumn election. So the Office of National Statistics released some public sector net borrowing figures for the 23-24 tax year earlier this week, and those showed that the deficit in the year, so that's the difference between government income and spending, was 120.7 billion, so a huge number. Whilst this was lower than the figure for 22-23, which does show that the government is trying to close that gap between income and expenditure, it was 6.6 billion higher than the forecast that the OBR provided to the Chancellor in March. So that is quite a meaningful difference. And it does mean that it's going to make it much more difficult for Jeremy Hunt to introduce any further tax or national insurance cuts before that election comes.
I think that's right, Ellie, that the path to further cuts certainly looks quite narrow now. I think the Chancellor could still try to do something if there's some good news through the first quarter of the current tax year, but time is really not on his side now. I've also seen some reporting this week that suggests, kind of through polling, that there's a concern amongst the pension age group that the Chancellor's cuts to national insurance in January and again in April will eventually lead to a reduction in the state pension. And this is obviously because of the notional link between national insurance and the state pension. I wonder whether, I mean, that's clearly a key voter group for the Conservatives, whether they've actually scored a bit of an own goal with their NIC cuts already. And maybe it's a good excuse not to do it again if he hasn't got the headroom to do so. Turning to developments directly impacting the tax world, there's been a few interesting case decisions that have been released over the past 10 days or so, which we'd like to spend some time on. Let's start, Ellie, with the dangerous world of corporation tax deductions on interest. We had an interesting Court of Appeal case last week concerning BlackRock. Can you tell us a bit more about that one?
Yes, absolutely. So BlackRock, who are the world's largest asset manager, has lost an appeal relating to UK corporation tax it sought to save on a $13.5 billion acquisition of Barclays Global Investors, from here we'll just call it BGI, in 2009. The Court of Appeal had overturned a decision of the upper tribunal on a transfer pricing issue, but then subsequently we made the decisions of both the upper tribunal and first tier tribunal, but actually on an unallowable purpose issue, so totally different to transfer pricing. So the Court of Appeal decision that's been handed down is a culmination of actually a years-long dispute. And it originally began when HMRC rejected the tax deductions relating to these loans going throughout the group. For those not familiar, the unallowable purpose rule essentially looks to restrict any deductibility of interest for UK corporation tax purposes if obtaining this deduction is actually the main purpose of being party to that loan. So it's not necessarily related to the business or the commercial activities of a company. Now, I'm not a tax investigation specialist, but I always find it very interesting to read through these judgments and how the conclusions are come to and how they use, you know, precedent that's been set before. And I learned actually about the but-for rules. So in this particular context, it was applied where the judge said that but for the tax advantage that we'll go on to explain, no loans would have actually existed in the first place. So back to BlackRock, the appeal relates to a structure that was put in place when it bought BGI. So the US part specifically was acquired through a corporate structure, which was called LLC5. And that importantly was a UK tax resident. So this was then funded by 4 billion of loans from another BlackRock group entity based in the US. LLC5 had then claimed corporation tax relief in the UK for the interest costs linked to those loans, and therefore that reduced the tax bill in the UK, but also of other profitable companies in the BlackRock group, and by using just the normal loss relief rules. The court had taken the view that there was an obvious answer as to why LLC5 entered into the loan transactions, given that it was actually a special purpose vehicle in order to buy the company originally, and that was only to obtain a tax advantage. So the directors of LLC5 had been briefed on this transaction beforehand, and there are board meeting notes that actually, prior to the decision being made to proceed, was that actually the UK has a very generous tax regime for interest deductions, and therefore they should be taking advantage of this. BlackRock have said they will be assessing their next steps, so perhaps one to stay tuned for, maybe another appeal coming up.
To wait and see. I think we're going to be hearing a lot about this case in the years to come, whether or not it's appealed. I mean, whilst the result of this case, kind of unsurprisingly on the facts, was that all of the interest was disallowed, that conclusion was very much based on the facts. The decision makes clear that where there are genuine tax and commercial purposes, the disallowance would be proportionate rather than 100%. So it kind of feels inevitable that there's going to be a lot of subjectivity here, which is going to give rise to further disputes between taxpayers and HMRC. So yeah, I can see us seeing a lot more about this case in the years to come. Turning to another case now, and a bit closer to my heart as a shareholder tax advisor, there was an interesting decision from the first tier tribunal this week concerning business assets. Asset disposal relief, so formerly known as entrepreneurs relief. For the uninitiated, where that relief applies, an individual taxpayer is subject to a special capital gains tax rate of 10% rather than the headline rate of 20% on up to £1 million of gains. Now, where this relief is being claimed in respect of the sale of a company, the seller has to hold at least 5% of the company's shares to qualify. And that 5% threshold is measured by reference to a few different factors like voting rights and economic entitlements. In the case at hand, it was common ground between the taxpayer, Mr. Cook, and HMRC that he did not meet that 5% threshold. Sadly for him, due to a spreadsheet rounding error, I think they were rounding to two decimal places, he actually had a shareholding of 4.99998%. Very unfortunate. The taxpayer argued, however, that he should qualify for the relief as the shortfall had arisen from a genuine mistake. All parties had intended for him to meet those 5% tests, and evidence was provided to the tribunal to demonstrate that common intention between the parties. In effect, the argument was that if the taxpayer approached the High Court and asked them to rectify the initial mistake, so the High Court can basically remake a contract from the date it was entered into where it's clearly wrong and everybody believes it was wrong. So the argument was that if we believe the High Court would make that rectification, then he should benefit from the tax relief. And actually, there was precedent for that approach. So there was an upper tier tribunal case dating back about a decade where the tribunal said, actually, we're happy that the High Court would rectify here. So let's work on the basis that they've made that rectification. And exactly the same thing happened here. The court said, look, it's clearly a genuine mistake. Everybody knows it. We're happy the High Court would amend it and would rectify the situation if they were approached. So let's apply the tax rules on the basis that it has been rectified. Now, the findings of that case are obviously highly specific, and in particular, the shortfall from 5% was so tiny that it meant that the hypothetical rectification would have like a vanishingly small impact on the other shareholders. And there was really good evidence to show the common intention, term sheets, various other documents, which showed that they were intending to have this 5% shareholding. What I find really interesting is it demonstrates the ability of the tribunal to effectively amend the facts. So the High Court haven't rectified this. It's still wrong, but the tribunal have said, let's pretend it's right because we believe that's kind of the right outcome that the High Court would take if they were approached. So yeah, very interesting for me advising in that space. So Ellie, last case of the day, a bit more fun. ChatGPT has maybe finally made an appearance at a tribunal decision. What can you tell us about it?
That's right, Rob. So another high-income child benefit charge case, which is becoming a common staple on the tax factor. I think I've spoken about it two or three times, even in the last few months. The nuances of the case aren't really what's interesting here, because it was accepted by both parties that the threshold had been breached. You know, there was a charge to pay, so that's not really what they were talking about. As is always the case, the first tier tribunal sought to set out the key facts and circumstances on which they would then make that decision. It was common ground between both the taxpayer, Mr. Latif, and HMRC that he had sent an appeal letter in May 2021. However, HMRC couldn't actually find that initial copy, and so Mr. Latif was asked to provide one, which he then did. However, HMRC then did find a partial copy of the original letter sent by Mr. Latif. And this was very, very different to the copy that had been provided previously. When questioned on this, Mr. Latif explained that before providing the letter as part of these proceedings, he had copied the content into ChatGPT and asked it to make the letter a little more professional looking and professional sounding. So whether you accept that argument or not, the original letter and the ChatGPT amended letter were actually different. And that's why it caused confusion as to whether Mr. Latif had made an in-time appeal against both the assessments and the penalties, or whether it was just the penalties. And that was what was quite important in the end. Whilst the case is highly unusual, I do think it could give us a sense of things to come, especially where there are amounts at stake. And even though some of these amounts are actually small, for a taxpayer, that could be quite a lot. But it also does mean that they might not need to have any representation. So we might, for example, see taxpayers putting together, for example, skeleton arguments with the use of generative AI, which then could help level the playing field, but in the short term is likely to cause absolute mayhem.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've all seen sort of cases overseas where people have had citations which don't exist, etc., using generative AI to help them. So yeah, watch this space. There could be a bit more fun to be had there, I think. So that's nearly it for another Tax Factor. If you've enjoyed this podcast, we also have a podcast series called Brave Business, hosted by journalist and broadcaster Declan Curry. The latest episode looks at the UK's research and development tax regime. What is it? How does it work? And how and why is it changing? What does all that mean for entrepreneurial business? And how can they improve their chances of qualifying for this essential relief?
The announcement in the budget of the abolition of the non-dom tax regime and a new modernised tax holiday for individuals moving to the UK has generated a huge amount of comment and speculation. But what do the changes outlined actually mean in reality? We've produced a series of articles and videos on our website of what this could mean for non-doms. Just go to Blick Rothenberg homepage and follow the link.
My thanks to Ellie for joining me today.
Next week, Heather Self is back and joined by a newcomer to both Blick Rothenberg and The Tax Factor, Tom Adams.
I'm Rob Goodley. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and goodbye.
That's The Tax Factor. We'd like to thank you for making us one of the UK's top 20 podcasts. Find all our previous episodes wherever you get your podcasts and join us again next time on The Tax Factor.